everyone. Hello. Some of you know me. Some of you...
Hey?
What's happening? Some of you do not. Those who know me usually refer to me as Uncle Barry, because some of you who do not know me, I'm just Jeremy's father. So there you go. A few years ago, I actually went to China a couple of times, and some of the people here, I don't know what if some people actually from English actually went with me. And when I went, we actually tried to learn some Mandarin. And we had a really lovely brother, Wen Dong. He was there to teach us like Mandarin. And Wen Dong is very strict, very proper, and which I think reflects what he used to do. I think he was in the army. And then this morning, I met his son Max, which is nothing like him. But I thank God for that, and I really I'm very, very, very happy for Wen Dong and his wife about Max getting baptized. I think it's really the grace of God. Also, another piece of information about me is I have been a deacon for many, many years. Last year I was a deacon as well, and then by September I was not a deacon anymore. And I started having a bit more time, so there was this one day when I was having coffee with my friend John here. And I was saying that, look, you know, we really, our English congregation, our young people, they really need to know a bit more about life, because there are lots of problems in life that we must equip them like to face. And then not long after, he came back to me and said, oh, we're going to do this series about like distinct or distinctive. Why don't you come and do a talk? Because you have the most life experience appropriate to come. So I said, okay, oh, fine, that made me feel pretty good. So I said, okay, I'll come and do a talk. And then afterwards I realized that was his nice way of telling me that I'm old. So another piece of information about me is that I'm actually old. Okay. Distinctive in difficulty. Now, I know John's doing a series about distinct or distinctive, and he's actually given me some information about like the series that he's doing as well. And the purpose of this today's talk about distinctive in difficulty was within his series about work and, like, you know, about work frustrations that you get in work, because there are lots of people and how hard work is and all that, which is fine. So I'm going to do a little bit of that. But because I'm not a real pastor, I'm not like I'm a normal person, right? I'm not a pastor. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time chapter and verse explaining what each word means in the Bible. But I'm going to share with you what the Bible means to us in real life. And that's the purpose of the two verses that Max has read out for us, is to show us what it means to us, why things happen. And I'm going to share with you a few stories, maybe not stories, or real life situations of things or people in difficulty. The first verse the first passage that Max read out for us is from chapter 3 of the book of Genesis, which actually, you would say, what has that got to do with work? Chapter 3 is about the fall of man, the fall of mankind. Well, what it's got to do with us is that because of the fall of man, the ground is cursed, and we have to toil and work hard, and with the labor to work to make our living. That's why work is so hard. And that's how God intends it for us, that we put the work to make a living. We have to work for our lives. So that is why, it's because we are in a fallen world. I also want to venture slightly outside work. Because other than work, there are lots of challenges in life. There are, like, in your studies, or in our studies, in work, in family, even in our ministry, even in our service in church, there are different challenges in life. There are other things which I've not put down because I don't want to touch on those other subjects, like even dating and courtship. There is a challenge. So, studies. A lot of us here are working. Some of us are going to university. Some of us are going to high school. Some of us who've been through high school would have got some very good HSC or A or ATA marks. Some of us may not have got those good marks. Some of us are getting worried about our marks, right? Well, not everyone's got a hard. I know some of us here have got really good, but some are not going to. Some people are actually going to fail. And that is not a good feeling, I can tell you. I know of someone, and I think, I think we all have been indoctrinated because of our Chinese background, we're Asians, about the importance of getting good marks, how good marks can set you up in life, because you get good marks, you go to a good college, you do a good course, you get good job, you get, you know, on and on it goes. Good marks are important, but not everyone is going to do that. I know someone who did not get very good marks, even though he went to a good high school. He didn't get very good marks. He did not even get to sit for the exam to get into the University of Hong Kong. He wasn't even good enough to sit for the exam. By some, you may call good luck, or good deeds that his father has done, he was given the opportunity to go overseas to Canada to study. So he worked hard in work because he had to make a living. This guy came from a very poor family. The family was so poor that growing up, he did not have running water. He saw his first toilet and his first tap, wash and basin when he started going to school. No toilet at home, no electricity, no lights. That's how poor the guy was. But anyways, he was given this opportunity to go to Canada to study, and upon his return, he was going to be the savior of the family. He's going to turn the family around because he would have a proper education. And going back to the 1970s in Hong Kong, this means a law. But you know what happens? In his final year in university, he failed. So instead of being the savior of the family, he was going to become the shame of the family. Because he failed. He was going to come back home without a degree. Imagine the impact. Imagine what can happen. Anyways, he failed, and he was given a supplementary exam. And one week before he was due to go home, he went up to the university and said, "Look, I have taken my supplementary exam. I'm about to go home because I've used up all the money that I had, and my visa's running out, being an overseas student. Can you tell me about my supplementary exam?" And the dean said, "Well, your professor has taken the papers home to mark. Why don't you give him a call?" So he said, "Okay, fine, I'll give him a call. Where is he?" "He's gone home." "Well, yes, so he's gone home. Like, tell me where he is." "He's gone home to a place called Dorset, which is on the south coast of England. And this guy was in Canada. The year was 1979, before computers were invented. Well, computers were invented, but they were really big. There was no internet. When long-distance phone calls were really expensive, you don't make long-distance phone calls are too only two types of people make long distance phone calls, rich people or someone has just died. So he had to go home, speak to the operator in London, got transferred to the operator in Dorset, somehow located this professor and asked him. And the professor said, "I remember you. I've not marked the papers. I've got no idea when I'm going to do them." And that was the end of that conversation. So this guy was there. Before his life even started, his life evaporated in front of his eyes. Can you imagine that situation? Well, I'll tell you what, I can, because that was me. I was that guy who failed. Before, when I was going to become the savior of my family, I was going to bring shame to my parents. Well, actually, in the third year of my university, I was brought to church by some friends, and I became a Christian in my third year at university. So that night, I prayed a very short prayer, and I said, "God, if the whole purpose of you bringing me here to Canada, all the way to Canada, is so that I can know you, well, so be it." So I accepted that. The next morning, I went to the university again. I spoke to the dean again. And at first he said, "Well, there's nothing I could do." And then gradually he changed. He looked over the papers again and said, "Look, you can go. I will sort this out." So I left. As I rode on my bicycle back home, I was so relieved. I was extremely thankful. I was so relieved. I said, "God, thank you." To this day, I do not know what my marks were for that subject. I had a pass on my transcript. Every other subject, I had a mark. Whether it was 51 or 65, on the subject I had a pass. He just sorted it out for me. That was a really difficult situation. And there was nothing I could do. But I learned a lot from it. Not because of what I could do, but because of what God could do, and also because how one should be willing to accept how God arranged your life for you. So that was a situation that I still remember today. And for those who are doing your studies, please remember, every mark that you get, you think may have come from your studies. Some people are going to get disappointed when they get even a 98. Some people are going to get a 67. Some people are not going to be very happy when they get a mark that they think, I want a bit more. But imagine this. If there was this one day, you've done your HSC, you get asked to come up on the stage, and God actually would come down and give you a piece of paper which says, "So and so, this amount that I have given you, and it is 55. Would you say thanks to him? You would, because that is what he's given you. And he actually personally gives that to you through the different ways. So always be thankful of what we get from him. Next, you will say, "Well, Uncle Barry, you are not very good in studies. That's why you've got such a big problem, because you're just not good enough." Well, I wasn't good enough, that's true. But let's talk about someone who's actually very good. Let's talk about a Harvard graduate. Some of you may know who I'm talking about. Let's talk about Harvard graduate. He's got to be pretty good, eh? Harvard graduate. But this guy couldn't find work. One place would employ him, and then would sack him in a few months. Another one would employ him and sack him after a few months. He finally gets an opportunity to shine, and then they let him go. He goes to another place to work, he gets demoted. How about that? Would you like that? That's not too good, is it? This guy, actually, because he actually did not want to use his Harvard degree to find work, this guy wants to play basketball. And he's Asian, and a lot of boys will know I'm talking about Jeremy Lin. Finally, he landed on Charlotte Hornets this year, and he still doesn't get a starting like berth. He still plays off the bench, and his minutes gets reduced every now and then. Sometimes he'll play more, sometimes he'll play less, but he keeps on plugging away. So when that happens, what do you do? But he's a very devoted Christian. So what do you do to be distinctive in a situation like that? You go for a distinctive hairstyle. Have a look at this. That's him. And that. And that. But that's not about it all. He took it all in with an attitude that's very different to everyone else. He doesn't mop about getting his minutes reduced. He doesn't mop about not being used, not being allowed to play to his full capacity, to his full talent. I'm going to show you a tweet that he posted. I'm not a real tweeter. I've got no idea what that means, but everyone talks about it. This, what he tweeted on a few months ago, after his team lost, and he only scored 6 points, and he only got to play 16 minutes, which is really not too brilliant. But he says, "Lord, you are long on my portion and my cup. You make my lot secure." And then he said, the Lord is my strength and my shield. My heart trusts in him, and he helps me. My heart leaps for joy. And with my song, I praise him. Throughout the last few years of his career, he has displayed a very, very godly character of always being positive. He never complains, he never whinged, and he's always positive to help his team, to do what is best for his team. Not a negative word, and he keeps on, in his postings, he keeps on referring to biblical messages, which sustain him and the church, and try to help others. Another difficult situation that we can find ourselves in is in families. Our families sometimes can be really, really chaotic, and sometimes you lose family members. Since I'm on the NBA, on basketball, I'm going to stay on NBA and talk a little bit more about basketball or basketball people. This guy called Monty Williams. He is an assistant coach with the OKC or Oklahoma City Thunder. About two and a bit months ago, he lost his wife in a car accident. His wife was driving with the daughters in the car. Another car crossed the center lane, had a head-on crash. His wife died. The other driver also died. Imagine how bad this can be. Imagine the impact to him. In this day and age of litigation, of people suing everyone, most people would say, I'm going to sue this like the other family, and I'm going to get all the compensation I want. Well, what did he do? Sorry, it's a bit small, But you guys are much younger, I'm sure you can read. I've copied and pasted the whole thing about it so that you know how many people actually has read this posting. This is what he said at his wife's funeral. Let us not forget that there were two people in this situation, and the family needs prayer as well. He said, and we have no ill will towards that family. That family did not wake up wanting to hurt my wife. Life is hard. It is very hard. And that was tough. But we hold no ill will toward the Donaldson family. I'm thankful for all the people who showed up today. It's a pretty tough time, not just for me, but for all of you as well. I'm mindful of that. This is hard for my family, but this will work out. And my wife would punch me if I were to sit up here and whine about what's going on. That doesn't take away the pain, but it will work out. Because God causes all things to work out. You just can't quit. You can't give in. This is what the Christian displays in a time like this. He's trying to, and this is what makes him different from the everyday person who would go about and whinge and sue and do all and hold a very vengeful heart. This is different. To show the love and show the forgiveness. And to insist on showing that Christian character. That's what we've got to do. We've got to persevere. We've got to insist on showing that Christian character. That's what makes us distinctive in difficult situations. Next, I want to talk about a couple of things which are much, much older. Not in modern times, but back in the Bible. I'm going to talk about David. I'm going to talk about David. You all know David? He's the king, yeah? Everyone knows David? Yeah, good. But was his life always so smooth? Not so. Not so. His life wasn't always smooth. Before he became king, do you know the king before him? Yeah, or you, of course you do. It was Saul, wasn't it? Saul was the king. And then God left Saul. And Samuel went to anoint David as the next king. David was also a lot more popular than Saul. So there was this once when in 1 Samuel 23, Saul pursued David. David had gone down to fight the Philistines. He was in a place, and Saul knows about it, and he was going to go after him. And David asked God, well, is he going to get me? Yes, he is going to come. He's going to come and get you. Are the people here going to give me up? Yes, they're going to give you up. So he had to run away. And he ran away and he hid and hid. In the next chapter, we would read and know that because the Philistines were coming, Saul was diverted to go and fight the Philistines. And on his way back, when he was taking a toilet break, he was vulnerable, and David was able to go in there to take his life. But what did he do? He did not. He went in, he cut a piece of cloth from his clothes, and then he confronted Saul and said, oh, why do you pursue me? You think I'm going to kill you, but no, I'm not going to. I could kill you just then, but I didn't. So, what David showed, because he said, because I will not do, because you were the anointed king and I'm going to kill you. So what David do was that he did not take matter into his own hands. Not because he wanted to, like, he's after me, so I'm going to really knife him in the back before he can get to kill. He didn't do that. He did not do that. He did not take matter into his own hands. And this is in ministry even. Next, I want to talk about Moses. You all know Moses? We all know Moses, of course, in the book of Exodus. In the book of Exodus, he led the Jews into the promised land. And of course, was that task easy? Of course it wasn't easy. He's the ruler of like tens of thousands of people, if not millions, heaps of people. Of course it wasn't easy. So in chapter 18, one would see that his father-in-law Jethro was there to visit him and saw that Moses was really busy. Day and night he was there judging everything for all the Jews. Everything comes to him, he was there to do everything. From daybreak to darkness, non-stop. He was really very, very busy. So Jethro came up to him and said, "Look, what you're doing is very good, but you can't do this. You have to step up what we now call cell group leaders. People would rule over 1,000 people, 100 people, 50 people, and 10 people. And they will look after all these individual groups." And Moses listened, and he did that. And the organization was much better. Now, the point I want to make is not about delegation. People talk about delegation a lot these days. It's not about delegation. It's about Moses taking advice, willing to listen. I've spent quite a bit of time talking about things, story, happenings. So what is it being distinctive in difficulty? Those situations we've talked about covers a few situations and showed a few ways of people handling those difficulties and how they behave and how it could be different with your everyday people. So is it about getting the best marks? Is it about being the best worker? Is it about being the most charming person in your workplace? Or someone who's always calm? Or is it just someone who's, because we want to display Christian characters, we just want to talk about the God and the Bible all the time. When there's a problem, say, "Don't worry about it, God will sort this out." Is it like that? I don't think so. And I'm sure you know it's not like that. It's not about outward actions, like things that we think we must do because I'm a Christian. Because I'm a Christian, I must always be loving. I must always be calm. I cannot be flustered. I must do this, I must do that. We put a mold onto, or a straitjacket onto our own personality or our character. Oh, it's not quite like that. It's not quite like that. We've seen a willingness to accept things which may not be what we want, but it may be what God provides for you. We've seen a way of showing genuine love and care and concern for others. We have to be passionate about our work, not just emotional. There's a difference between being passionate and being emotional. Being able to discern what comes from God and the willingness to heed. It's not about talking, it's about walking a Christian life. Actions speak louder than words. When we want to talk about walking a Christian life, I just want to make two points here very quickly. One is don't underestimate the power of humility. And don't estimate the gains of sacrifice, because that is the example of Jesus Christ. When we want to talk about being a Christian, when we want to talk about, being distinctive in difficulty, that's the example of Jesus. In this day and age, people do not promote being humble or about him. People say that you have to really stand out, you have to. Even if you don't want to promote yourself, you cannot let yourself be put down by others. Well, Jesus came, and the And he humbled himself, took on the shape of man, and he died for us. That's the most humility one can take. Don't underestimate the gains of sacrifice. In our work, a lot of times people say, well, that's not my job. He is giving me all his work. Things, you know, we don't want to cop anything. That's what the everyday people tell us these days. Well, don't underestimate the gains of sacrifice. Sacrifice and gain may sound contradictory, but the sacrifice of Christ gained the salvation for mankind. That's the ultimate sacrifice. And the gain is our salvation. We sometimes may think we are sacrificing something, but the ultimate gain that God has for you is beyond what anyone here can measure. And that is the example of Christ. To be able to do that, our humility, our willingness to sacrifice, our distinctiveness, our, you know, Christian character comes from a genuine faith in God, knowing that He cares for you. We don't have to fight for anything. We don't have to work hard. We have to put our best foot forward. But we do not have to insist on getting that only outcome that we want right now. It comes from a genuine relationship with God. It's not about just talking about it. To have a genuine relationship with God is what allows you to have that faith. And to have that genuine relationship, we need to know the Bible well. We need to read the Bible. And not just as head knowledge, but make it part of our life principles. The other verse that Max read out for us is from 1 Corinthians 10:13. In the older versions, the word temptation also means test. So as we go through life, as we go through our trials and tribulations, what the Bible tells us is that no temptation or no test or trial has overtaken you except what is common to mankind, which means what we're going through. Sometimes we see our immediate problems as very big. This is life and death now. This is very big. But the Bible is common to mankind. Everything God knows. And God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted or tested beyond what you can bear. Sometimes we think, oh, this is really so hard. It's beyond me. I can't handle this. Please take it away from me. But what the Bible says is, there's nothing that He's given you that's beyond what you can bear. But when you are tempted or tested, He will also provide a way out so that you can endure it. So we know that the Bible tells us that God always provides a way out for us. If we know that God always provides a way out for us, why do we have to be worried? We can transcend all those problems. And that faith, and the behavior of that faith that gives us is what will make us different from anyone else. Romans 8:28. Actually, all of the verses which led to 8:28 are talking about difficulty. And we know that in all things God works for the good for those who love Him, who have been called according to His purpose. Everything works for the good of all of us. Everything that happens to us is for the good of us. That's how He planned it for us. Because this is John 17 is a very, very special chapter in the Bible. This is the chapter that Jesus first prayed for His followers, and then He prayed for the church, all the followers of His followers. He prayed for the church. Here, What he says is, he says, my prayer is not that you take them out of the world, but that you protect them from the evil one. They are not of the world, even as I'm not of it. Sanctify them by the truth. Your word is truth. As you send me into this world, I've sent them into the world. For them I sanctify myself, that they too may be truly sanctified. Jesus came to this world for a reason. Similarly, he sent us into this world for a reason. And here is his prayer for us, whom he has sent into this world, for us to be sanctified, for God to protect us from the trials and the tribulations. That is his promise and his prayer for every one of us here today. If Jesus is praying for us, why should we be worried? He prays that God protects us from the evil one. We shouldn't be worried. So, we should really be believed and have that confidence that we can overcome everything. And that is what makes us different. So, as he cares for you, that's what he wants us to do. Display his image and show the true Christian characters. As we go, this is something I've actually copied from a different sermon, but I think it's really good. As we go through our day, we should see God's hand in every situation. Every trial he brings lovingly to shape us into the image of Jesus Christ. Every blessing he graciously gives us to show us his great love. Every delight our senses, whether the taste of food, the beauty of creation, or the sounds of birds chirping, should cause us to rejoice in the presence of our God. Everything, every day, everything that we go through is there for us so that we can be better, we can be closer to the image of God. And that is the difference between us and everyone else, the image of God. And lastly, I want to read from the book of Colossians for those who are struggling with work. I want to read this. It's not in there, but I read this verse this morning and I felt that it's really, really good for us to know. Colossians chapter 3. Chapter 3, verse 23. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as working for the Lord, not for men. Everything that we do is not for men, it's for God.